right, we are back on the Andy Finn Show, and we're listening to the Rainmakers, one of my favorite bands. And the Senate voted today to allow the nomination of John Roberts to go to the full Senate. The Senate Judiciary Committee voted today, and they voted 13-5. Now, if you read my blog item about John Roberts, I predicted after the hearings a week ago that he would get 14 out of 19 votes. Well, I thought there were 19 votes. It turns out there's only 18 votes. I looked to see if there was somebody that didn't vote, but I guess there's only 18 members on the Judiciary Committee. I thought it was 10-9 Republicans and Democrats, but it's 10-8 Republicans and Democrats, apparently. So I got the number of nay votes right. In any case, I thought there'd be about five people. And there were. In fact, the five that voted against him were... Let's see, I think I have that somewhere. No, I don't. I don't have it in front of me right now. Yes, I do. The five that voted against John Roberts were all Democrats, of course, and they were Dianne Feinstein of California, Joe Biden, which I wasn't sure Biden would vote against him, Ted Kennedy, who we knew would vote against him, Charles Schumer, who everyone suspected would vote against him, and Dick Durbin, who everyone figured would vote against him. And I think Harry Reid announced today that he will vote against him in the full Senate. He's the Democratic minority leader. Feinstein said, quote, "I knew as little about what Judge Roberts really thought about issues after the hearings as I did before the hearings. This makes it very hard for me." So she's basically saying he didn't answer the questions, which was one basis that people said they would use not to vote for him. Biden said his vote was a close call, but he said, quote, he said that Roberts, quote, "does not appear to share the same expansive view of fundamental rights of previous nominees I have supported. I'm unwilling to take the constitutional risk at this moment in the court's history." Well, I have a lot of respect for Joe Biden, and I did enjoy his questioning of Roberts. I thought he was the best, he had the best exchanges of any senator with him. I know the conservatives thought Biden was too tough on him, but he's a big boy. John Roberts can take it, believe me. Then the Democrats that voted for it were Herb Kohl and Russ Feingold, both of Wisconsin, and then Patrick Leahy of Vermont. And so we ended up 13-5. And, you know, this was almost inevitable. Okay, this was a slam dunk as far as I'm concerned. I didn't see a basis for Democrats rejecting John Roberts. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of Roberts being on the court. As somebody who's left of center, but only moderately, I would like to have seen a moderate nominated to the court. You cannot in any way, shape, or form claim this man is a moderate. I think he's a moderate when it comes to his intellectual thought processes, but they're grounded in a conservative philosophy, and he masked as much of that as he could during the hearing. So he came off very well in the hearings. And so it seems to me that you just can't deny Bush the guy he wants in this case. You know, Roberts, first of all, he was brilliant on the stand. When he was questioned, had a chapter and verse to recite, and he wasn't looking at notes, and he wasn't listening to anybody else whisper in his ears. He had it all in his head. Now, admittedly, this is his area of expertise, but let's face it, when Clarence Thomas was up there, the last Republican judge to be confirmed, he didn't have a grasp of these issues. He even went so far as to claim that he didn't ever have an opinion about Roe versus Wade, the abortion rights ruling. Senators quizzed him about that. They said, well, not even a private conversation. He said, no, I've never discussed it with anyone. So basically, Clarence Thomas got up and lied through his teeth to the committee because he thought that was the only way he could get on the Supreme Court, I guess. Because, of course, he's had discussions of Roe v. Wade, and of course he has opinions about it. He's let us know, since we've let him on the court, what his opinions are. John Roberts didn't do that, meaning John Roberts did not lie to us. As far as I know, I believe he told us the truth. And he did reassure me about a couple of issues. So the issue of the right to privacy came up. And Roberts said that he believes that a right to privacy exists in the Constitution. Now, there was a time when he argued on behalf of the Reagan administration that there was no right of privacy in the Constitution, that this was made up. He now says there is one, which is a good sign. He would not go so far as to say it extends to the issue of terminating a pregnancy, read abortion. What he did say was that a right of privacy covers birth control. That is, if a married couple wants to use birth control in the privacy of their bedroom, or any couple, I suppose, that yes, that is covered. You cannot take away birth control. But he wouldn't go so far as to say abortion's protected. So most liberals assume that he is still in the anti-abortion camp and will do what he can to limit it. On the other hand, the second issue that came up was the issue of precedent. And of course, when people talk about precedent, most of the conversations were with abortion in mind, although there were plenty of other precedent kinds of issues that came up. Most of the pointed questions were about this issue of privacy. I'm sorry, precedent when it comes to this doctrine of privacy in the Constitution, because that's a relatively recent discovery. And the Latin term is stare decisis, and Robert said repeatedly that any opinion that's been handed down by the Supreme Court deserves deference, deserves standing under stare decisis. That is, that it is an issue of settled expectations. People expect that this is the law of the land, so you don't want to, just because a new Supreme Court comes in, reverse a bunch of rulings the previous court did, unless it's clearly bad law. And we had plenty of examples. And what was interesting was, of course, Roberts was willing to talk expansively about the examples of bad law, everything from, you know, Dred Scott to the laws that were overturned by the civil rights legislation and civil rights decisions. But at least he did say that he believed strongly in precedent. And beyond that, he also went on to more general issues, such as the need for consensus, that, you know, it's not a good thing to have a Supreme Court that's always divided 5-4. And so his goal as Chief Justice will be to try and forge consensus. You know, you can't ask people to compromise when they have strongly held views, but I do believe that he will be good at that. Now, whether he'll be marshaling, when he sees five votes together, he'll try and persuade the others, or he'll always be trying to persuade towards his point of view, is never clear with people. But I actually think he's going to be a fairly fair Chief Justice. The other one that I was very pleased with was the general issue of interpreting the Constitution. You know, there's been this debate in recent years, and conservatives argue that the Constitution should be interpreted very strictly. They use the phrase original intent, that we must go with the original intent of our founders. And when they hear the notion that the Constitution is a living, breathing document, it drives conservatives crazy, because they want to believe that we can go back to the world that was in existence in 1776. Actually, the Constitution was signed a little bit later than that, but that's a nice round year for our ears. And you can't go back to 1776. You know, Jefferson and Madison and Washington and all the founding fathers would think it was silly to hear us talk about them so reverentially, that we thought that their views had to take precedence over anything that comes up today, because the world's changed so much. And they would expect us to adapt the Constitution as needed to that. That's why we're allowed to change it. But also, you have to adapt your interpretation of things. For example, a black person was worth 3/5 of a white person when the Constitution was passed, and that was codified into law. So the founding fathers didn't get everything right. And it's a matter of emphasis in some cases. So that when the conservatives say that we must have strict constructionists that will interpret the Constitution faithfully and narrowly and go after the original intent of the founding fathers, I've always thought that was silly and been worried about it, because I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I really believe that you've got to be willing to update your views. The world gets more complex. There were no corporations, for an example, back then. So what do we do now when we've got these large corporate enterprises, large organizations of all kinds? The only large organization was the government back then, and then state governments. There were no other large organizations. Now we have organizations with money and power that dwarf state governments, and together they dwarf the federal government. Very different structure. So the idea that you can go back to, quote, original intent, the founding fathers couldn't have dreamed of the world that we find ourselves in today. So I was very pleased to hear Roberts say that his view is closer to mine. Because like I say, I am not a constitutional scholar, and I sometimes wonder whether, you know, what the majority of constitutional scholars think. I don't actually know that. But he basically challenged the view that conservatives have put forth that the Constitution must be strictly interpreted, and that justices must limit themselves to the literal words that the founding fathers wrote and what we believe they meant at the time. Roberts said in his testimony, quote, "I depart from some views of original intent." And he said the founding fathers intended the Constitution, quote, "to apply to changing conditions. And I think that in that sense, it is alive." Well, hallelujah, because that strikes me as a very sane position. On more specific issues, he didn't really take a stand on this issue of religious symbols in public places. He didn't really take a stand on affirmative action, although he said he's opposed to quotas, but not affirmative action. Actually, he said they're not the same thing. And voting rights, he had back in the Reagan years questioned the constitutionality of parts of the Voting Rights Act. He repudiated that. He said he no longer questions that. And I guess repudiated is too strong a word, because I guess that brings me to my last comment about Roberts's approach to these things. He tends to say, like, he backed away from a lot of things he wrote in his youth, working for a very conservative president, President Reagan. And he said that he always said, well, I was working for the Reagan administration. He just claimed those weren't his views. He never really backed away from them, so per se. Although it's pretty clear they were his views in many cases. And that did disturb me, because he talked in the first person in some of these memos, and he was giving advice to, you know, it could be the attorney general, the solicitor general. And so it clearly read like his opinions and his advice. And then he said, well, I was working for the Reagan administration, so I was really reflecting their positions. Well, not when you're talking in the first person in internal memos, essentially given advice. That's my take on it anyway. But anyway, John Roberts is going to get in. And I think a lot of these Democratic votes were in part to position themselves. So the principle there is that there's another nominee coming, and you don't want to make this one too easy, or let Bush think he can nominate an ultra-conservative, you know, a dogmatic conservative next time. So different people have different reasons for voting no, but I just think this guy's a slam dunk. If you can't vote for this conservative, what conservative can you vote for is ultimately what it comes down for. And this should not be a test of liberal versus conservative. I think that Bush and every president should nominate moderates for the court, but I never expected a moderate from George W. Bush. My guess is he'll pick a arch-conservative for this next one and pick a fight, although he's in a very weakened position politically, so maybe he won't. But in any case, the problem here is that this battle shouldn't have been fought in August and September of 2005. This battle needed to be fought in August and September of 2004. And except for the fact that Bush campaign was very successful at convincing people that the most important issue was terrorism, which I don't believe, but that's what they've had us believing, we should have focused, the whole country should have focused on the Supreme Court as the primary issue, and had a president who would nominate moderates to the court. rather than hardcore conservatives. And Roberts is a hardcore conservative. But the problem is, elections have consequences. George W. Bush won. He gets to nominate the people that he thinks will be best. And so we are essentially stuck with whoever George W. Bush gives us. And when we come back, we are going to move on to some of the Hurricane Katrina news and a bunch of other issues.